meeting back to order. Ready for Road and Bridge info. Three commissioners and Mr. Preston ready to go, looks like.
Good afternoon. I placed a letter before you on your desk there to get some input. In the last few years, the snow rodeo, we didn't have one last year, and we had several accidents and several slide-offs. And I would like to make the employees that show up, make it mandatory that they operate at least the snow plow course. In the last few snow rodeos, we've had people in attendance that stood around and socialized throughout the day and watched the activities. I think it's important that they be involved in the activities. And I've also heard that six or eight employees were interested in taking the day off because they were not interested in participating in the snow event. So if this letter goes out the way it's currently written, there may be some upset employees.
Well, I would think that we do it for them, but we're not doing it for just doing it. I mean, I had never attended one, but in talking to hearing both commissioners talk before, it helps them tune their skills up, and it's kind of a mandatory type of deal. So I would assume that whoever's there needs to operate the equipment. Is that wrong to think that?
It's a safety issue.
It's a safety deal.
And it lets Frank and Harlan and
Stottle,
you know, it lets them know what people need to go on what routes and the road conditions and everything else. They vary so much in the county that I think it's a good idea. I think it's strictly Frank's call, but I think that...
Mandatory? Don't you think everyone should go?
Well, sure. They're getting paid for it.
Also that day, we have 1.5 hours of a professional trainer coming in from Caterpillar to talk about equipment operation and safety. And we also have a half an hour on specific safety and operating a snowplow. So that's 2 hours of training in the morning prior to the actual events.
Snow rodeo is Thursday the 4th, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
I have not denied anyone vacation in past times. I'm not sure I would want to deny somebody a day's vacation. But knowing that they're not interested because of what the event is, that's sort of disheartening to me because it's an important part of their job.
So you're asking to send this letter?
I'm asking to send this letter out and let them know that while they are in attendance, it will be required of them to go through the snowplow operations test or exercise.
I think you should do that. My question to you is, if a person already has like a week's vacation or something like that, I don't think that should be an obligation that they show up for the snow rodeo. But if they just decided that they won't take that day as a vacation day, we had some discussion a few years ago, I don't know, it may have been when I first came into office, about, may have been with Dan Ratterman, about those one-day vacation, taking vacation deals. We tried to eliminate that because there was people, I believe it was the first year that I was here, Chuck, and you remember when we had the discussions about that, because there were people showing up, if they didn't like what was going on that day, they took a day's vacation, and there ended up being a person that ended up getting terminated that carried it to another level. He just kept, if he come in, they didn't like what was going on, he just went home. And it was on the east side over there. I know there was quite a bit of controversy about it. So I think that you're the road and bridge superintendent, and I think this letter's fine with me to send out.
So the half a dozen that have said they were going to call in and use a vacation day, are they, did you keep track, are they well-experienced drivers?
I haven't kept track. Actually, I've not been told names, just numbers from supervisors.
How are you going to be able to evaluate what they are?
Well, won't be able to if they're not there. I want to move forward with the letter. I just want to make sure that I wasn't being too abrasive or that in direct conflict with how any commissioner would feel about it.
No issues for me.
Sounds good.
One accident, if it saves one accident, you've accomplished something.
Okay, appreciate that. I'd like to thank Sean for working on the website for Transfer Station. We talked about it last week, and he came over and let me know it was up this week. It's currently under the heading of Road and Bridge, but I'd like to put it in the department heading. I'm not sure everyone in the public would go instinctively to Road and Bridge to look for Transfer Station information, so it will be a separate tab under departments to look at that.
Great.
Sounds good to me. Yeah.
Mike, and it's a one-page deal, and there's a lot of information, a lot of questions that we might commonly get in our office and or calls into Karen, so I appreciate Sean's work. Microsurfacing starts this Thursday, weather permitting. There was a press release done this morning. I've not seen it out in the public yet, but it was done this morning. We're doing a countywide sign inventory. We had a meeting last week with Patsy and Tanya, a sign man, and myself, and we have an inventory of a little over 12,000 signs that we maintain, and I wasn't aware that we were tracking it so well in GIS. We not only know the GPS coordinates, we know the installation date, we know what condition it's in, and we've met twice now on this particular issue. And what it allows us to do is stay in tune and on top of the condition analysis and federal requirements for reflectivity, which are not in place right now, but they will be next year. And I think we're doing good. The number one sign that's a critical sign is the stop sign, of course, and we are up to date. Several years ago, there was a change from 24-inch to 30-inch, and to the best of our knowledge, all of ours are 30-inch. And if and when we do any replacements, we're using what's called high prismatic or high intensity, and those are the types that you can see from about as soon as your headlights hit them, however far you are down the road, they really reflect back to you. I attended last week a Homeland Security meeting up in Springfield, and one of the things I walked away with was there's some new regulations in regards to radio frequencies and public use of various frequencies, and to say it short and simply, I believe that we're on a wideband operation and we need to switch in next year. Was it 11 or 13? I thought it was...
No, we need to switch our radios to a narrow band frequency. I think the new purchases the radios have that narrow band option. It's the older radios that may still be in service. I don't know if we've done an inventory or not. I've got the actual white paper from NACO on that frequency.
Okay.
But the broadband, the spectrum that they're going to be requiring, basically what happened is the old public radio waves, radio frequency was a wide band. They wasn't very specific on what frequency you had to operate because the whole band was available to all public safety. And with time and money and all that, they're only limiting so much because they can sell the extra frequency to private people now. So the new radios are interchangeable. It's the old radios, which I think they have to be 15 years or older. It's been a 15-year change.
So I had the office or Deborah call Rayfield Communications to see if we could get a ballpark figure of where we're at in our radios, and that was the outcome was that we probably have some that would need to be changed. And next question, I guess, would be can they be changed with the crystals inside, or does the entire hard piece need to be changed out?
The conversation we had at one of my committees was it's a new radio. You can't upgrade the unit, or it costs the same to upgrade a unit versus just buy a new unit.
And I've also heard two dates. One was 2011, one was 2013. I think I heard 2011 up at the meeting, and Rayfield said 2013 this morning.
I'll see if I can't find something and send to you real fast, Frank.
Well, while you're looking at the radio frequency deal is a strange deal anyway. We had when I was in the dog business and had dog tracking collars that we put on. I was one of the first people around anywhere that had those things. And you hold an antenna out there that's got three or four prongs on it, and it's got a beeper on it to let you locate, and then whenever you locate your dog across the beam, the signal gets fast.
Mm-hmm.
You can pick up once in a while. Strange thing, they didn't have a speaker or anything on the thing. Once in a while, you'd pick up a radio station. That little old, oddest thing for something like that to happen whenever you're...
Another subject, in the past, since I've been here, we've discussed the pros and cons of our fuel stations and their reliability, not necessarily their reliability, but their accuracy. And we found that on the west side, the type of pump that we have there, we're unable to calibrate it, and it's not broken, it's just the type that it is, and it's older. I have done some preliminary looking into new pumps and the card lock system because of the percentage of fuel that's been questionable. And the card lock system at this point in time for the two sides and new pumps would be in the $6,500 to $8,500 range per location. I was wondering if you wanted me to continue to look at that, or...
Is it documented?
The price?
Are you talking about the regulations as far as the our pumps, the quantity of fuel going through them, or are you talking about, if somebody goes out to one of the pumps and fills up a vehicle, does it have a price that regulates with?
We have what I call a paper trail. We have a tablet out there where everybody's supposed to put their name, the date, the vehicle, the mileage, and how much fuel they took. And then we have on each page is a starting meter number and an ending meter number. And Kathy, on a monthly basis, looks at those bills and tries to reconcile what the meters say versus what was taken out. And accuracy, sometimes people may or may not write the tenths down, which is, we've tried to do everything we can in how and when people get fuel for their equipment and or their vehicles that they drive. We try and get as accurate as we can be, but I still think we're missing several percentage points on...
I think it's excessive 10%.
Yeah.
I think it's excessive 10% we're missing on fuel accuracy. Right now, I reviewed the fuel logs from last year, and you can't say anybody's stealing, but what you can say is it's just inaccurate. I mean, you know, the big concern what we heard earlier in the year, or maybe last year, was maybe someone's stealing fuel. All I know is that the pumps aren't accurate to the readings. And, you know, we have a line, I think we say it's evaporation, but it doesn't add up right. Something, we either have to be more accurate, and I think it comes down to the pump, what you're talking about, but how much money are we saving with this thing? What's our savings? I mean, do we...
I've had one inquiry to the people that service the pumps that we have now, and he's gotten preliminary numbers back to me. Those were $6,500 to $8,500 per site. What it would do is hold us 100% accountable, because it's supposed to be a foolproof system. We use a card like a credit card,
right?
And it tracks time. It tracks all the things we're trying to track right now. Along with that would be the newer pumps or meters, not necessarily pumps in both units, but meters that would be have the ability to be calibrated. Also, in talking to him and our fuel supplier, depending on time of season, evaporation can be anywhere from 3 or 4% to as high as 7 or 8%. So an additional 3% of or more above that is 10%. And at the amount of fuel that we get, that's
a lot.
That's a heck of a lot of fuel. I can gather more information, see if there'd be any cost savings. I mean,
I would gather more information to get a more firm price. I mean, I'd like to, but...
Well, I think just to be able to explain to the people that we're going to issue the cards to that this is for savings to the county. I mean, that's the main thing. We don't want to have a everybody think that we think the whole bunch is stealing something or something like that. I'm just talking right. about the, and the changing of the pumps is going to have to reflect a savings, or I'm not going to be for it.
Right, right. All right.
I will look into that more. And that's all I had on my list for today.
Man, you've got short today. Well, what did you do, take off last week?
No, I saw that we had about a half an hour on the agenda, and so I accommodated that schedule. I didn't know we'd be done in 20 minutes.
I had a concerned citizen call about us clearing tree limbs in a certain area. I won't tell you who it is, because it's over the airwaves, but basically we started on a small side street versus starting on like Acacia Club Road, and it was in front of someone's personal house, and they're saying, why did you start there versus starting on the main roads versus you get into side streets, which there was a valid point. Let me see if I can't find it real fast here.
I think the road, it's a road in the Acacia Club to Foggy River neighborhood, which is the microsurface neighborhood. We're not actually microsurfacing Acacia Club itself, but all of the roads to the north, including Foggy River, Wisconsin, and those areas. And we were doing the side streets. We had to get 11'6" clearance at the curb line or edge of road to have the equipment go through and be able to apply the material.
I see.
So in the event they were to do that and have any trimming be done on, and the tree was in the right-of-way, if the tree were to be made obnoxiously unbalanced because of our trimming on the roadside, I asked that a branch or two be taken off on the opposite side so that the tree looked balanced versus looked like we went in there and chopped it.
Okay. Well, it seemed like we could have probably communicated a little bit better to the homeowners. At least, let me. Is that what you're thinking? This email.
I got one from you maybe a week or two ago. In regards to a tree trimming situation.
Probably. Okay. I'm looking here. My great filing
and
system.
Public notice was not done. Prior to several weeks ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago, I talked to you about going into other neighborhoods, residential type neighborhoods, and doing tree trimming, and the fact that it's within our right to work in the right of way and do this type of thing, but that's the only call I know of that we've gotten. I'm wondering if we shouldn't publicly notify, either by press release or by a door hanger, that we'll be in the neighborhood doing that type of thing.
What's your guys' thoughts?
We haven't in the past, but maybe it's the right thing to do. I don't know.
Well, it'd be a nice thing to do, but is it cost effective? I mean,
that's a good question.
We've got 500 or 600 miles of road.
It'd be a lot of walking and knocking on doors or just to put the flyer at the door.
I think you could do it over the radio. Just like they do whenever the state might not have but 2 or 3 locations, and just say that there's going to be
tree trimming
in the area of such and such on such and such a date, and give it for a week's time, and then the next week do it for a different week's time. I think that would cover it. You wouldn't have to be out there and supply notice to everybody that
I would probably agree with that too.
Traveling. I hear it all the time. It may not even be anything that I'm interested in, but it'll talk about Douglas, Taney, Stone County. MoDOT has a signaling way to do that, and mm-hmm. I'd follow that.
Well, what would be the case, like on Acacia Club Road, whether you were dead, if you used a message board? Again, my first thought is it's going to take more time than it's worth.
Right.
But if you had roads that
heavily travel,
had only one or two lanes of getting in, like mm-hmm. Acacia Club, Iowa County, you could put a sign up on each end. But again, I question whether that's
good use of our time.
I mean,
it may draw more questions.
Did we send a letter to that lady who sent the request?
Which lady?
The lady who did file the complaint. So, not the complaint. The lady who sent us the note that I forwarded to you.
I didn't have any contact information, I believe, is it?
Okay.
Well, you're talking about it, and we're actually talking about easement situations with the tree trimming.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any luck, or have you focused on the power companies, both of them, on their easements and right-of-ways to...
A call was made this morning, and we're awaiting a return call.
Okay. And it's just so the commission's kind of... And I'll not get into location, but we have several roads that there are poles that set within our easement. And I told Frank when we were on location, I was supposed to be off last Thursday and ended up working all day, different places of road easements and different problems with poles, distances, widths, so on and so forth. So I thought the best way to handle that is to get some documentation from both power companies about if they've got a pole that's sticking 3 foot out into our easement and causes us a problem, for us to get in touch with them, see if they'll move it or if what their procedure's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you brought that up. From driving around, I've noticed that White River's put up with some new poles. Quite a few places, it seemed like, and one road that I travel pretty regularly, it's one that you may be talking about. It appears that way. And here's the fence. And it's, anyway, I'm wondering if they schedule, I would think they do, schedule that work, or maybe we can communicate with them. They're going to be putting up new poles in areas that we go out and look at them, or to say they're putting up a new pole and then we notice it, because that's what happened to me. I just, oh shoot, here's a new pole. We should have talked to them about that before they put that in.
Yeah. Maybe. And I know why they...
For a little cost to the county, we could have got the poles for it to be better for our road and safety and blah, blah, blah.
Right. The thing of it is they use the path of least resistance. And if we have a road there that is a county road and it goes up through and it's got a place that's not being used, although we haven't widened it already, we have our easement, but we haven't widened it, they stick it in that easement because they don't have to trim or anything like that. And so communication is what I talked to Frank about, is with the power companies too.
Right.
For them to send notification or us to send notification on road easements versus utility easements.
We'll go back to what you said to start with. Are you thinking that we've got poles that are not...
That are sitting in our easement.
That are sitting in the county's easement.
Mm-hmm. I know we do. And some of them have asphalt almost to the edge of them.
Two other things.
You said you were done.
Yeah, I thought
that. Did you not say that?
Well, you said I had a few more minutes, so I do, too.
All right, you guys
saw it was Vicky. And
my goodness.
Two more things. I wanted to inform you that Taney County Road and Bridge is helping the city of Forsyth with the walk path today and crack sealing it, and that's in anticipation of the city of Forsyth applying a microsurface on the walk path also. So that's currently underway, and there is a 3 o'clock Taney County Transportation Advisory Board meeting today, and that group's meeting on a regular basis, and things are progressing well.
And you knew those two districts changed ownership?
Yes.
Okay. And hopefully they know that. They should have been notified. Otherwise, you can notify them.
Okay.
And then the Tiger II grant, we did not get money. Actually, the state of Missouri got none.
I thought they got three.
I thought it said three on the...
It said in the email, but I pulled the document up and searched by Missouri and everything, and we got no money. The entire state got $0.
Wow.
Our boys to the south, Northwest Arkansas, they got $15 million for 36 miles of bike path on a $38 million project, but they got a 36-mile bike path from Bentonville to Fayetteville. They had $14 million come in philanthropy, so donations.
Walmart.
$15 million came in from the Tiger II grant, and so they got a little bit more money to find. So that was the closest project that I could see that actually touched us. There was some in Oklahoma, Kansas for some freight rail in the north, and all the other states had stuff. Mostly it was looked like a lot with rail traffic, but Missouri got zero.
Huh. How much fuel tax do you collect off those bikes?
You know, not as much as you need to.
That's what I was kind of wondering about. $15 million.
So anyway, there was $19 billion in applications. $600 million went out. There you go.
Say that again.
$19 billion in applications, right. And $600 million went out.
Hey, before you get away,
yes, sir.
I don't know if it's worth mentioning it or not, but I think I was listening carefully to the radio last week, and they were announcing our cleanup, and there wasn't anything said about this isn't for your homeowner's trash, this is for the types of stuff. And I'm not complaining because I'm thankful that they're mentioning it. I don't know if we should say anything to them or not.
That it's not for normal residential trash?
Yeah. I know that's in your press release.
Right.
And I think it was Saturday I heard it.
You probably can get word to the radio station for them to fix it.
Okay. Yeah, my thought was if at least say a comment.
Yeah.
If you're running it again, first, thank you for running it. We appreciate you running it.
Yeah.
We're not whining. Number two, if you do run it again, you might look at your press release and say this isn't for your regular homeowners or your regular trash hauled by
right.
trash man or something like that.
I did see Jan writing down this morning whenever I mentioned about the burnout home and if anybody had anything that they needed like that to contact us, but that would be taken in. So she was writing it down.
I probably confused the issue. The issue was on that the local trash hauler said he'd haul it for free.
Mm-hmm.
But evidently, we discourage or don't allow local trash haulers to bring stuff in on the cleanup weekend. Is that right? Because he said...
I don't know if we've officially announced that, but...
Discouraged it, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
You mean commercial business? Is that what you're talking
about? Commercial business.
Oh.
Just because of the load or something. Mm. But anyway, he was willing to haul it on those days. We need to be sure. So are we okay with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm fine.
Roll off. He said probably
absolutely.
Take more than one.
Sure.
It'd probably save a lot of time anyway than having a little rig 52 times coming in and out and all
yeah.
that jazz. Okay, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Tom.
So are you ready for us?
We're ready for Delta Dental, looks like.
Delta Dental.
Good afternoon.
I know that some of you have met. This is Lynn Pyle.
Hi.
Sales manager for the Southwest Missouri. And she's the one that does the renewal. And here she brought us this. We're not sure how much of this you want to talk about. It goes in a lot.
28 minutes worth.
Because Kim's got to go. Okay, I think we're going to turn to page 13 when we land.
Yeah.
But, okay.
Let me just tell you what you have, okay?
Please.
That might just give you a good idea first. If you look, I'll go through it just to tell you what's on each page, and I'm not going to go through all the details because we can narrow this down to how many x-rays were actually performed, and we're not going to get to that detail for you. But page one is basically the cost management report, and this shows you what portion of the claims went toward the plan design specifics. Our standard claims management, and then the Delta Network and what savings it brings to the county. Because you are self-insured, there is savings by utilizing our network. So that's kind of what page one is. Page two is an explanation of each line item, so you can go back to those if you want further detail. Since I'm not going through it, at least it'd be something you could refer to. Page three is going to what shows you where your claims are coming in network. You can see that 78% on the number of services are in network, 21% are out. And then in the dollars, 81% of your claims are paid in network and 18% are out. So that kind of gives you an idea about utilization of the claims and how much people are utilizing the network. Yes?
Under number of services, that's number of office visits for layman's speak?
No, number of services. So, like, you may go in for a cleaning, and
okay.
they may do an exam, x-rays, and a cleaning. So there may be three services.
Gotcha.
Okay?
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, then page four is what's going to show you your claims by whether they're for employee, spouse, or child. So you can see who's utilizing the program. Then we get down into the plan design, and you can see on your services what services, what percent of your claims are for preventive care. Your claims are almost 50% for preventive care, which is outstanding. Anytime we see a client that has people going at almost 50% of their claims for preventive, it's saving claims dollars down the road. And you'll see that as we can see how our claims have gone from this year to last year. The next page is where up at the top it does a comparison of your plan to our entire book of business. I'm not going to go through all of those with you, but you can see how that actually compares to that. Page six is going to do a comparison of relationship, and this is like the types of service and whether they were for the employee, spouse, and child. Page seven is going to be a total of page 8, 9, and 10. And what it's going to do is give you the number of services, as I mentioned, like for radiographs, which is your x-rays. There was a total of 348 services. If you go to page 8, it'll tell you 189 of those services were the employee. Page 9 would say 64 were the spouse. And page 10 will say 95 for the child. So you can do a breakdown of each type of service by the type of person that's enrolled in the plan. Page 11 is your claims by age, and this is the number of services by age. So you can look at the age categories and kind of see. I'm going to guess that your average employee age is probably between 45 and 54, just because they're the highest utilizers on the dental plan. I may be wrong, but normally somebody will turn around and tell me, yeah, our average age is X, and it usually falls right into that. Page 12 is the dollars by age. So it's going to pretty much relate to the previous page. But this one's the dollars, so you can see what dollars were spent by age category. Then we get to page 13, which is where we really want to focus on. And this is your claims by month and your number of subscribers by month. And you can see that the claims are going to vary every month because of it could be the fact that maybe there is five Thursdays in the month, which is when we pay claims every week. Or it could be that there is, maybe it's spring break, or it's summertime, or it's, you know, there's usually reasons why that we see claims, what they do, and when they do it. So this shows you that variance. It gives you the number of primary subscribers, the second column from the right, and that gives us pretty much we're right about even. We don't see a lot of fluctuation. Just a few people every month. So that's not causing any problems there. When we get into the average claims per primary subscriber, you're going to see that average is going to change every month based on the paid claims. But you get down to the total, and this is telling us that we have a $34.53 average cost for per primary subscriber. I happen to bring, I don't have a copy for you, but I did bring last year's, and the average cost last year was $35.85. So our actual cost per primary subscriber is down just slightly. So that just kind of gives you an idea where the claims have been running. Then if you go to page 14, this is going to be the demographic profile and show you the actual number of employees enrolled, the number that are employee only, the number that have dependents, the total number of spouses we have enrolled, total number of children enrolled, and our total members. So we actually have 511 members enrolled in the dental plan. And that's an average of 1.81 per primary subscriber. That is a little bit low. Normally we see over 2 per primary subscriber, but a lot of it depends on the industry. You all being a county, you do have a lot of blue-collar workers with street, roads, you know, those utilities, those kind of things, and therefore they tend to be maybe not as high of people that take the benefits. They may have the plan because the county's giving it to them as an employee, but they may not be enrolling their dependents. So that kind of gives you that idea. The last couple pages is the actual renewal exhibit. And the things that I want to focus on here, and I'll just to give you a little background, you all are self-insured with Delta Dental. You utilize our network, and we do all of the administration as far as paying the claims for you, and upkeeping the network and handling all the customer service. So that is what Delta brings to you with this, because you are self-insured. The claims are the claims. And we run them through our system, so they're still coming through the network, so there's still that network discount there, but you're paying those dollars. And currently, you have your employees all set up that you are paying the entire employee cost. Then if they wish to add any other dependents, then they are paying that additional cost themselves. I understand in these economic times, everybody's looking for ways to save money. And there are a couple of ways that this can be done. One of them would be that we would be looking at, and if you'll drop down to the very bottom, when we look at the premium equivalent rates, I checked with Mr. Finley, and he did tell me that you all currently utilize the rates that we suggest to do your payroll deductions and your funding. So if you'll look at the current, we would be saying $27.15 is what you would be paying for each employee per month to have the dental insurance. Then if they are going to enroll their employee and their spouse, you deduct that $27.15 from that $60.59. So that's how much they are paying if they're enrolling a spouse. It'd be the same thing if they're enrolling a child and then a family. You all are using those numbers currently to do your payroll deductions, and you can see that the claims cost, as I mentioned, had gone down per person. So therefore, we were recommending about a 3.2% decrease in those recommended budgetary dues. So it would actually lower the cost that you're charging to the employees.
Okay.
But now, as I was saying, when Mr. Finley and I talked and we were discussing, there's several ways that you all could do some cost savings measures. We know that the claims are the claims. What you could do with those claims is you could attach to them a different plan design. That would be, you know, you would be moving services to lower levels, paying them at lower co-insurances, and reducing the claims cost. That's not really what I would recommend. What we're seeing more clients doing is doing a cost share between the employees and the employer. As far as asking the employee to contribute a small amount toward the cost versus you paying 100% of the cost like you currently are. And when we did a calculation of approximately about 25%, if you would ask the employee to pay, you know, $6 or $6.50, which would be about 25% of the cost, that'd be around a $3 something per pay period, and then pre-tax would be between $2 and $2.50. Then that cost could go toward the funding of the claims, and that would save approximately about $20,000. Right now, what you're paying is about $93,000 for just the employee cost, because that you're paying their full cost. But if you ask them to contribute, then that would lower that cost, and you could have about a $20,000 or so savings to do something like that.
Quick question here.
Sure.
But if I'm reading this correctly, the recommended rate's still to go down anyway if we don't change anything.
Correct.
So, right. I mean, we're already saving some money. If we don't change anything with the plan,
right,
we're already going to save 2 or 3%.
Correct.
No?
Hold on.
I hear correct
okay.
here, and I got a nose okay. shaking over here.
Okay.
You need to come here. I'm sure that's what Chuck's going to say. Unless I'm misunderstanding something here.
Real true costs are not the premiums themselves.
Right.
Our real true costs are what we pay out for the insurance, which is about $90,000 something. The claims is what our real true costs are.
Right.
So if the claims go down next year, yes, we are saving money. But when the premiums go down, we
collect less money. Mm-hmm. And so if the claims went up, we'd pay out of pocket.
Now, you don't want to raise the rates so that you lose people, and we talked about this. If you lose some people on this, you know, we're probably most likely going to lose people that are healthy dental people
right.
anyway. But if you ask them to pay the $3 per pay period, I think that would be something that would cut into that $90,000 we're paying out for claims, and we'd be paying instead of $90,000 out, and this is countywide, not just in GCR, $90,000 we'd be paying out about $70,000 if we had the same claims experience next year.
Okay.
Okay.
So your recommendations, your
I feel like that I feel like we're very benefits rich. I think it's the industry standard is asking employees to pay a part, and I think that's a really, really small part.
Okay.
Yeah, what Rick is saying is correct, that basically because you're self-insured, you're still paying the claims, but if you're getting contribution by the employees, that cuts back on the amount of claims dollars you're spending because they're contributing more in their payroll deductions.
Gotcha.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, as I mentioned, I can bring to the table, all kinds of plan design options, but I think Mr. Finley and I discussed that may not necessarily be the way we really want to go versus maybe just asking for a small contribution on the employee portion because we would not lose. If it's only $2 or $3 a paycheck, we're not going to get people disenrolling for that amount because they're going to get way more in benefit for even one preventive care visit, even if they contribute $2 or $3 a pay period to that cost.
I don't know if I'm following. Are you saying on asking for the employee if they're the only person on the plan to pay or for their spouse or children?
Well, they're already paying for their spouse and their children to be enrolled,
right.
So that cost wouldn't need to change. You would just be raising that by $2 or $3 in addition to help pay for part of their cost.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, we're just adding basically $3, three or whatever,
right.
What you're suggesting.
Yeah. So for the people that have just employee only, they're not carrying independents, what you're suggesting is maybe letting them chart, pay $3 a pay period. If that's if that's what the county wants to do.
Okay.
Do you have any questions?
Yes. When do we have to have this signed up, Rick? It goes to January 1st, starts it, right?
It's a January 1st.
Right.
So we have to make a decision.
You make the other decision. You make a budget decision that I think you need to look at.
Okay.
Probably just depends on when you need to communicate to the employees about any changes. We can do this clear up to the end of December. I can implement any change, and really it won't be anything that I need to do. If
it's
you guys are changing your costs, it's your internal budgeting and how you want to handle that.
Okay.
Okay. Just looking at ways to try to help you guys
appreciate
cut
that.
Costs just like everybody is.
And right. I think we'll have to look at the total budget before we give you any
And if you have any other questions, Lynn went through that really fast.
Yeah.
We told her she only had a certain period of time.
Okay. Okay. All
right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Rick, you got something?
Yeah. I don't know that
if you're going to continue to work with Delta Dental, you can give her an answer any time. As far as budget goes, if you want to add this on to let the employees pay for part of that, then you can make that decision later. But,
everything will just go like it is.
It won't be a change to her if we do that.
I want to continue with Delta Dental from this commissioner's perspective. I just got to decide or absorb what we're saying if we're going to charge the employees.
Okay. And that's
That's all.
So you can give her an answer pretty quickly. You won't have to look at budget to get.
Because ultimately, if I say $3 to all the employees, then that's going to save the bottom line by about $20,000 to the county's budget.
Yeah, Jim, and I am just from right up here, I think I budgeted to transfer about $50,000 for GCR, and I'm guessing the majority of that, probably then the majority of the rest of that came from Road and Bridge, and then there's 911 transfers part of that all goes into that 600 account, and that's the numbers that we would look at there.
Okay.
That's where it would save us.
So the $20,000 is all over.
So it would be divided up just
Because I just took the total number
Be dependent on
eligible.
It wouldn't just GCR bottom line, it would be dispersed where it came from.
Right.
Okay. Very good.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we need to put some kind of a time that we're going to come back and address this?
What's budget? I mean, we're going to start talking about budget pretty soon, so. I mean, it's going to be in the budget discussion, I have a feeling.
That's where I'm going to look at it.
Which is going to be next month, which is, what, next week is next month.
Yep. What else?
That's all we had.
That's it.
One thing I was going to throw out, we've got 10 minutes here, Chuck. You're going to be here tonight, obviously, the 7 o'clock over at Kirbyville School, sounds like.
Planned a bit.
Only thing I was going to talk about format was... To avoid, I have a feeling it may be a bigger turnout, and to avoid a bunch of debating between citizens, I'd like to limit them just to 5 minutes one time and not 5 minutes multiple times. When we had it, we had less people. It seemed like toward the end it was, they were starting to debate each other, and really my thought is the purpose is to gather and collect information, hear concerns, and I don't want to turn into a debate amongst them people. So that's what I was going to say. The only thing I'd like to suggest is, not knowing the size of their crowd, of course, if it's a small crowd, then it's a different setting, but the 5 minutes I'm great with, it just, they can speak their piece in 5 minutes and go to the next person versus letting them come back up repeatedly, because it seemed like...
I'm fine with that, because I think that we had a good meeting this morning and discussion, and I think that as we progress in those meetings, the subject matter that they're concerned will be brought up this morning, and as we come on to them, as we go through the code book, we'll know what those are.
And you may not have heard any of the code book discussions, but what we did was we picked, we tried to go through 10 pages, the first 10 pages, and we would just, anytime there was a, we'd read it, we had Eddie read it paragraph by paragraph, and if there was a concern or anything that contradicted each other, we made Eddie and Frank highlight the area and make comments so that we can come back. We had many, just in the we were in the glossary definitions, and we found many definitions contradicting themselves within that same document, within those first 8 pages we went through. So from height to what is clearing, what is grubbing, what is agricultural, it just seemed like from the very beginning it was contradicting itself.
Three duplications in one, on one subject. I mean, it was...
So we didn't, I mean, all we did is we went through the first 10, well, we got through 8 pages.
Yeah.
And just making notes of anything that's contradicting itself is all we got to. So,
what else? Okay, so we'll have 5 minute limit period.
That's the only thing. That was the only thing I wanted to change about that.
I don't have my notes. Anything we want to mention? If you've got a staff problem, you need to come to the commission.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yep. Yeah. Eddie asked if he needed to be here to that one, and I said I said. Whatever we told you last time, which was stay away, but he's available. He said he can be here, but the question is, does he need to be there? And then one more thing before Rick jumps in here is, we also know that we've now got 2 lawsuits, and we had another lawsuit filed today against plan zoning that Bob received, and we believe both of those people are going to speak tonight. So I want to know if Bob should be there to tell us we can or can't talk about anything specifically. Since now we have...
Well, one thing, I'm being there with the whole... somebody mentioned that there was one lady who might be there who had filed the previous lawsuit. I don't know about the second lawsuit. We really shouldn't talk about those specific issues.
If we know... If I know who those people are, and just say that there's no comment... We can't comment because of a lawsuit. Does that keep Bob from having to come?
Yeah, I think that's completely. We can just write those 2 names down. It's the, you know which ones they are.
I can guess. I know one of them.
116 and F5.
Especially the...
not the intersection.
The emergency waiver.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
You want us to make that, you're saying it may be best to make that comment up front?
You might just say the reason of it, yeah, you might just say that because there was people that really were bad and you're not being there.
We asked him, the first one, we asked him not to be there.
I didn't know that, but yes.
And just FYI, Chuck, they're going to internet live broadcast that for us. So they'll be able to broadcast it live, we'll record it. And then we all have our own table, microphone, and we have one podium with a mic for comments.
Are you gentlemen going to speak at all?
Not much.
I hope so. I have a prepared statement.
What I was going to say...
82 pages.
82 pages.
I was going to make a suggestion. If you make an announcement, say that we don't intend to speak. We want to hear from you and your concerns. And for that reason, we're not speaking, and we didn't have... we instructed our planning and zoning person not to come as well. About you and your concerns, and you know what I'm saying.
Gotcha.
Does that make any sense?
But
yes.
If you guys are speaking,
yeah, but I don't know whether we'll do it or not.
It depends on how it gets. So, I don't know
who's responsible for getting unlocked and locking up everything.
Carlos is going to call me, so I'm assuming he's going to be there.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I don't know the answer to that for sure.
Sean is going to be there, I think.
Okay.
For my team, we can find that out. Bob's going to be there. Well, Bob, you're a school board member.
Well, if I'm there, I don't have a key to the place. I can get one.
I don't know the answer to that. We can have Julian call, find out. Want to do that?
Be sure.
We'll have Julian call and make sure that we've got it locked or unlocked. And so we're saying, Bob, you don't need to be there. That's what I heard. You good with that?
Good with that. Thank you.
Recess?
Recess.